Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Beverly B., compulsive overeater.
Thank you so much. Will you give me the heads up of? Okay, great. Thank you. I am Beverly, and I am absolutely, without hesitation, very clearly a compulsive overeater, and very grateful to have this opportunity tonight. Such a big meeting. I guess I didn't anticipate it would be. I haven't been on a Zoom meeting in some time. I've been able to get to live meetings for the past while. So this is lovely. What a way to spend the Sunday night of Labor Day as I go back to school. I'm a teacher on Tuesday. So I speak for myself. I do not speak for OA. I will share my experience, strength, and hope. And I understand that the focus of this meeting is specifically for the newcomer and those coming back. My experience is a long one in OA. I have 32 years plus a few months of abstinence, which is tremendous, grateful. I had dinner tonight, ate on the earlier side, about 20 to 6. And with the last bite, I put down the fork and I felt lovely. I felt comfortable, enjoyable meal. I enjoy my meals very much, peaceful, calm, abstinent, all that lovely stuff. So how does that happen? Because I'm the same person who, I was thinking about this morning, and I asked my sponsor who's here tonight, can we mention food? I'm the same person who would go to McDonald's drive-thrus and order 5 to-go pancake breakfasts and come home and eat them. And then feel like, why didn't I get more? Because it wasn't enough. I'm the same person who would, on a Saturday night, tell my roommate at the time, Lori, when I was in my, I guess, early 20s, that I was going out with some friends, but in fact, went to my car, I live in Toronto. So many people here, not from Toronto, it's awesome. Went to a little strip mall where they had a Chinese food place, ordered Chinese food, sat in my car alone on a Saturday night, eating enough food easily for 6 to 8 people, maybe more. Ate it, threw away the trash, came home, and my roommate Lori said, so had you fun with your friends? And I said, yeah, it was okay. That's me too. I'm the same person. I worked at a community center in downtown Toronto when I first arrived here. I'm originally from Montreal. And when work was over, I would be compelled, as I always was with the food, and I would go to the stands. They had these sausage and hot dog stands. I don't think I see them anymore, although they could be there. And it's just that they no longer compel me to go to them. But I would start at one and go to another and go to another. And I'm the same person. I had a job when I was in Montreal. Those of you, there's someone here from Montreal. I worked at Al Van Hoot in 2020 University by the train station. I managed, it's like a Starbucks, a little coffee shop. And I was allowed to take home leftovers. And I would bring them home. We had a second fridge in the basement of my parents' home. And I'm the same person who would then go downstairs to that second fridge. It was actually in the garage, and eat the leftovers. And I remember eating, this happened every weekend for 3 years, but I can remember one particular time there were these croissants with mayonnaise and salami. That's how they were. And I must have eaten 6, 7, 8, 9, just fast, fast, fast before my parents could come home and see me and say, what are you doing? And that's just a snippet of what I did. And most people in my experience in OA have dessert items. I always went first for food. Certainly I would eat whatever there was. I remember binging on tuna fish with mayonnaise, and I do not like tuna. I never have liked it. It's just that my mother wouldn't have missed it, so I could binge on it. It was always about huge, copious binges. So when I started by saying that tonight my dinner was lovely, as my breakfast, as my lunch, and when I finished the last bite and I put it down peacefully, joyfully, easily. Wow. How is that from the same person who did all those things? And of course, a thousand times of those few little stories I just mentioned. I share this when, and I know there's a lot of people I know here. I share this every time I share. I always had a special passion, excitement for food, but I also had a special excitement for other things when I was a little girl. I loved Barbie dolls, my favorite thing in the world to play Barbie dolls. That was fun. And it might even have been as exciting as food. But then I think when I was around 7 or 8-ish, that's when everything flipped and nothing could hold a candle to food. How to get it. And my parents always watched me. I was chubby. And they didn't, I have no doubt, only for my own well-being, they thought it would be easier not to be chubby. They're quite right. So they watched me. And so I learned really early on, you sneak food. And I went till about 11 or 12 years old, not binging the way I would come to binge. And then in my teen years, then it really got huge. Whenever I was alone in the house, I would eat anything I could eat. I started always having part-time jobs. So especially in university, I worked at that coffee shop and I always had extra money from my jobs. Almost all of it went to binges. And the binges got bigger and bigger, and I got more and more desperate. And along with the binge eating came lying. If it served me, I lied. Completely unaccountable for anything. If I thought it would in some way save me from doing something, or I needed to binge, or I had just binged and I literally couldn't find something to wear, I could put on easily 10 pounds in a couple of weeks. I would just do what I had to do to get by. That's kind of how it went. And I graduated from McGill University. I cheated a lot in McGill. I didn't do the work by and large, and somehow got by and then had a job. I've always been very good at talking. So I had a few interviews and I'm a good writer. I must have written, I graduated with the Bachelor of Commerce, got myself a couple of interviews and got a job in Toronto and they paid for me to move. Well, that was it. Done. We're good now. I'm moving to Toronto. So of course I'm going to get slim and I'm going to be perfect. And it would be slim, boyfriend, perfect. That's how everything would unfold. And in fact, I did lose weight. My thing was always this since those early teen years, huge, huge binges, so depressed, so upset, the fat, the discomfort, and even just the binge itself was very painful. Food would, I'm very short, I'm 5 feet tall. The food would come up here. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't breathe. And it was always going to change like that somehow. So I was always waiting for the, so nothing was bigger at that point in my life than moving to a new province. So I was part of a training program with 16 people from across Canada. I was 22 or 23. It was fun. It was like camp, which I'd been to camp. And I didn't binge that way, that often, that much. And weight came off. I wasn't slim, but I was healthier. I was smaller, not slim, feeling better, hopeful. Like I had figured it out. And then I just shared this recently. So if you were there, I apologize. But it was a party that one of these, we were 16 young people from across Canada in this training program, and friends of mine were having a dinner party. I was really excited. I really liked these people. They were good friends. This was great. I was losing weight. I felt better. And I stopped and binged at the Peanut Plaza on the way to their home that they were rent. They were from out west. And that one got me more than anything. Why would I have binged that night? On my way to their home for a dinner party, I really liked these people. We were so close. I was thrown. Why would anyone do that? And I went to their house. I felt sick. I couldn't even enjoy. I can remember that meal. I can remember being sick. Of course I ate, because once I take that bite, that first compulsive bite, the only thing that gets me to stop is if there is no more food and I have no access to more, or someone comes in and sees me and I'm just so mortified. Oh, although that stopped working too. I would just keep binging even in front of people. I was so humiliated to binge in front of. And so I ate the dinner. And that one was really weird to me. Why did I do that? But I'm sure I just, I kept going. And it went like this. Then I heard about OA. And I was in OA for 7 years here in Toronto. And it was helpful a little bit. And I went to meetings a little bit. And I called a sponsor a little bit. And I kept binging a little bit. And mostly I was annoyed and resentful and jealous. If I saw someone speak and they were slim and they looked really happy and they sounded well, I didn't go up to them and say, "Could you tell me what you're doing? Because I'm still binging sometimes, maybe less, but it's still not good." But I never did that. I just didn't like them. And I was angry and resentful. And I won't swear here, but it was like, you. It's not fair. I'm coming to meetings. I'm doing everything. How come I'm not slim? And this is how it went for about 7 or 8 years. And this is all I can say. Every binge was the last binge. And I think I meant it. I think I was sincere. Who would want to binge? Who'd want this? Who'd want to? I'm about 60 pounds less than I was. And 5 feet tall, it's a lot of weight. And I always knew each binge, it had to be really good because it was the last one. And then something happened. I do forget if it's April 5th or 6th, 32 years ago. I can never remember that. I binged, and instead, for some reason, well, I mean, I think I know the reason, but that binge, instead of saying, "Okay, last binge, tomorrow we'll start, tomorrow we'll," I said, "I'm never going to stop." It was the first time I shut up long enough to just have nothing else to say. And I called someone in program, I believe the next morning, Susan G, and I said I binged again. And I used to always have an explanation, "Well, this happened and you'd binge too," and I didn't have anything to say except I binged again. And I can't stop. It was the first time I always was going to stop, and that was the paradox. And then she just said, "Well, what do you think you can do?" And I said, "I can do 30 and 30. I must have heard it around the rooms, 30 meetings in 30 days. And can I call you every day for 30 days?" She said, "Yes." I went to 30 meetings in 30 days. And I believe what happened for me is what it says in the big book. It rearranged my brain. I was talking to my sponsor about this today, and she used this phrase that higher power can perform psychic surgery. And I said to her, "Have you used that term with me before?" Because I thought it was brilliant, psychic surgery. And she said, "No, I haven't used it before." So I think that's what happened. And I never understand what's the riddle of why does someone get abstinent at a certain point in time? I mean, I was around the rooms for 7 to 8 years, not doing what was told. Why at that moment? I don't know. But I kept coming in the 7 and 8 years, not faithfully, but enough that something must have permeated. Did I hit my bottom? No, there's infinite amount of more bottoms for me. I'm pretty sure about that. So I don't know why at that moment, but I sure am grateful. And so that I did start to truly listen. I had a sponsor, and what was suggested to me, I did. That first year of that abstinence, so it's 32 years in April, this past April, was far and away the most beautiful year of my life. I've had other lovely things happen. I have two boys in their early 20s, married a very long time. I have a job as a teacher that I truly love. Lots of lovely things in my life. No year, I'm going to be honest, has ever touched that year. It was such a tremendous gift to be free. Not just the food, that's always number one for me because nothing else can come after, but also of the lying, the cheating, the poor me, the self-centeredness to a large extent. And I do work on that. That continues to be a daily basis, but there was just a rearrangement. literally at a cellular level, I believe there was a rearrangement in how I saw myself and how I saw myself in the world. Someone called me today. I have three sponsees and one person who calls almost every day, although she's not my sponsor, a sponsee. Three's my limit. And she said to me today, "So you still have to do work every day in program?" And I said, "Yes, I really was caught a little off guard." And I said, "You know, it's sort of like asking me if I breathe every day still. I'm human." And my sponsor says this: when something happens, well, it sounds like you've had a human experience. I mean, I think obviously we're all human, not just people in the rooms, but all of us. We still have moments where fear, for me, that's a big one, will come up. Sometimes, not so often, thankfully, but resentment, whatever the case may be. And so for today, the idea that I have a higher power 24/7, that is able to guide me and direct me and help me and comfort me and walk with me is everything. I wouldn't be abstinent if it weren't for that. That is why I'm abstinent, because I believe that there is this source. I have no idea how it works. And I'm not a big fan of the word God, except that it's so darn convenient and short. But I like knowing. I like that term, that I have a knowing. And for me, meditation is so lovely. I feel like it just calms me down and I breathe and I'm in my body, not just my head. And that's where I really get centered for the beginning of the day. And I turn to that power 24/7. One of the readers I really like, who's not a 12-step sponsored, but says that higher power is nearer than hands and feet. And I always say that because what's nearer than hands and feet, right? That's higher power right here with me always. And then guides me. And I ask my higher power literally, should I have this for dinner? Should I turn left or right? Should I fill up the car with gas now? Should I call my sponsor now or later? Literally, and then of course, the bigger things, I'm feeling so resentful. Show me what to do with this higher power. It's a constant source of direction. And what a remarkable way to live. And none of it makes sense. So I don't bother to ever figure it out. I don't need to, because as they say, the proof's in the pudding, it works. And obviously, not just for me, for so many of us. And I'm not a big why person. I don't know why a lot of things. I don't know why. And I think I could probably spend the rest of my life trying to figure out whys for some things. And I'm not sure it would help. I don't know, maybe, but I'm not sure it would help. But what I do know is it doesn't matter. And some people are interested, right? They're really curious. They want to understand things. That's wonderful. But I just feel we don't need to be well, to live well, to be of service, to be abstinent, to find joy, to find clarity. By and large, most days, most of the day, I'm quite peaceful. I love the idea of looking for joy, gratitude, and not to say stuff doesn't happen. It certainly does. Oh my goodness. And I also believe that it says in the big book, and I do believe that there are times where outside resources play such an important role. My older son has mental health issues. He seems to be doing okay right now. I'll take it. But I've certainly consulted outside resources and I've taken courses to try and be the healthiest parent I can to support him and to learn. So I so believe that. And then somehow, everything I do that might be outside of program always ties and dovetails so beautifully and never in any way suggests that there's a different path that would be better for Beverly. In fact, it always supports and confirms how right this path is for me, this path of believing in a power greater than myself that will restore me to sanity. And that's been my experience every single day. It is those of us who are, I'm 61 and a half, those of us who are in that age group or approaching that, like we understand how quick time goes. I mean, I cannot believe I'm 32 years plus abstinent. And it is kind of shocking, all of us who, as I say, who are, that age, regardless of our abstinence, understand like time is like the wind, but it is kind of amazing. Holy Toledo, 32 years. And yet it doesn't matter at all because it is just one day at a time. Like, what a brilliant concept. Everything one day at a time, certainly with our meals. One of my first sponsors said, there's another meal coming. If you find yourself hungry, what do you do? And oh, maybe I should just talk about the food. And that's the truth is it's so not a big deal in my life anymore. It's why it didn't even occur to me. So I have three moderate meals a day. I do have one snack. For a really long time, I didn't, but I introduced that maybe a year and a half ago, and it seems to be working well. My thing is I cannot be trusted with a blueberry that is not planned. Nothing. It's this. If I have, and I'm not exaggerating, if I had, like, I have blueberries. If I had a blueberry that was unplanned, if I went to school, I bring my lunch every day. If I went to school and somebody brought beautiful vegetables, even herbs, if somebody brought beautiful herbs from their garden and they were in the staff room, which some teachers do, and said, please help yourself, I could not take those beautiful herbs and add them to my lunch. My lunch is done. My head has locked it in. We know what's for lunch today. I could take home those beautiful herbs and add them to my dinner if I want, because I have not yet decided on dinner. I cannot ingest anything spontaneously. That's exactly where the disease lives for me. Black and white margins. When I sit down to dinner or lunch, whatever it is, and my breakfast literally is the same for years, like exactly years on end. I need to know the first bite. And I need to know the last bite before I start eating. So if I'm at a restaurant, in my head, I don't announce to the table, but in my head, I'm going to say to myself, okay, I'm having one, two, three. And then if somebody else orders my favorite thing that I love so much, it's totally peaceful, but I've already ordered, I'm done. I can come back to this restaurant if I like another day and order that. I'm done. It's spontaneity, it's seconds, it's more. That's for me the disease. That's where it's waiting. So it's three moderate meals a day. I weigh in once a month. I do my 10 step at night. I have a checklist buddy, which I love that. I was introduced to that day one, 32 years ago. I've kept it up. I've had about maybe four checklist buddies. We meet now. My buddy lives in Whitby. It's about 40 minutes outside Toronto, and we do it on Zoom. Call my sponsor, not every day. I call my sponsor, I'd say on average three times a week, and then as needed. If something happens that feels really big or scary, I will call three sponsees. In the summer, I'm able to get to three meetings a week. In the winter, really, we started a Saturday meet. The plug for if you live in the Toronto area, there's a fantastic in-person Saturday meeting from 2 to 3 in the Yonge Lawrence area. Or anybody who's not from Toronto but is visiting, we'd love to see you there. What else is key? Oh my goodness, I never have extra time. I talk too much. This is quite shocking because I see it says 7 minutes. So I think that's probably it. I mean, honestly, if it's not coming across, the thing that I have just overwhelming feeling for is truly gratitude. I'm so far from getting it all right and it's all perfect and rosy, but it's really, really good. And the times when it's not really good, as we all have those moments. And I've had some tough stuff. I had a cervical cancer. It's now 12 years. That was tough. And thank God, like program, right? Just program, program, program. It was the only thing that comforted me. I was actually numb, paralyzed with fear at that time. And then the stuff with my son, it's been really, really painful at times, so powerfully painful. And writing, 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 give it away, higher power, higher power, higher power. Through all those things. So I really am so deeply grateful for this design for living. I know that it works, and it's just a question of us showing up. And I was told in the beginning, shut up and listen. And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but for me, it was actually really well advised. And I'm glad I did. I'm glad I shut up and listened and heard what I needed to hear at that time. So I think that's it for me. Thank you so much.